It's okay. It's okay. He won't hurt us. He would have killed me by now. Okay? I think it's because we're not actually part of the movie. He doesn't really know what to do with us.
What do you mean? Yes, you have.
Nope.
Yes, you have.
Nope.
You couldn't be my friend back then if you didn't watch The Shining.
Oscar, I've never seen the whole movie from start to finish. I've seen segments, and I could have pieced it together.
Wow. So.
Yeah, it was weird, bro. I was like, yeah.
Why are you doing a movie podcast?
Shut up.
I mean.
Because there's a gun to my head?
There's essential movie watching, and then there's essential movie watching. And somehow the latter just eludes you.
Well, you should make me a list of things I should watch, and then I will go through it.
It's like, you know, it's like trying to explain the color blue. Don't you just know blue? I don't know how to explain. I don't know how to write in a list what you need to watch. All right. Raph said he's ready. So you're ready, Luke?
Yes.
Good. All right. Let's do the countdown in 5, 4, 4. 3, 2. Hello and welcome to another movie podcast. My name is Oscar, and with me today is
Luke
and
Ralph.
Yeah, Ralph. What's up? This is episode number 111. 111. Palindrome. Anyway, today's episode is going to be three movie reviews, and those three, one of them is not, none of them are going to be Tenet, just to let you know right now. But the three movies are going to be, what's it called? Bill and Ted Face the Music.
Right.
I said that right. Then we're going to do Get Duped with an exclamation point. I'm not going to yell it. And then we're going to conclude our show with a review of The Shining from 1980. Not the one that Stephen King made, but the one that Stanley Kubrick made, just to let you know. Anyway, you can reach this episode and all of our other episodes over at otherpodcast.com. as well as whatever you're listening to us now, on your phone most likely, / laptop. And over there you can find all our previous episodes, all 110 episodes we've done on there, and other marathons that we've got going on there, which includes a half-eaten Steven Spielberg one, a kind of never-ending Twin Films marathon in a way, others that are completed, like animated marathons, classic marathon, things like that. So check it out at otherpodcast.com. Now, Luke, how you been the last 2 weeks?
Pretty good. Just the daily thing, going to work and coming home, playing Call of Duty.
You had a birthday recently.
I did.
Well, happy birthday. How old are you? 35?
33.
Nice. Feels like
this. Not that old yet, Oscar.
No, I guess not. So, did you have fun?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I felt it today in the morning. We all did.
Then play some partying. Good partying then. Good job. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you were telling me off air about it, and I was like, "What? I did not receive an invite to this at all. I didn't know that was going on." And you said it was just happened organically. I'm like, "Okay,
it did." Yeah, like I mean, people. Like, oh yeah, we're off today.
A text can also happen organically, but that's okay. Sure. No big deal. And it was funny too because. Just lay it out a little further. Luke's birthday was technically yesterday from this recording we're doing. And he was at Ralph's house, or Ralph's place. And I was actually there at the time when you guys were like drinking and partying and having a good time. But I didn't know. I was downstairs. I was there to pick up laundry. And no one was home. And so I didn't see anyone, hear anyone. So like I went in and out not knowing the rageness that was happening upstairs. And that's kind of funny to mm-hmm. think about. So that happened. Anything else?
No. I did have a little thing where me and my buddy, we were watching, you know, before we watched Bill and Ted 3, mm-hmm. We were playing Tony Hawk Pro Skater, so we felt like kids again.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, you know, we did like the usual thing. Like we went to get like Mr. Submarine. Got subs from there, and then I had, like, shitty junk food. Felt like we were, you know, children again.
Yeah, but I bet you your colon feels it more now than it did back then.
Nah.
Nah?
Nah. Made of steel.
Yep. Keep thinking that and see how far that gets. It's going to really hurt. The stomach lining is gone. That sounds fun, though. That's like a nostalgia trip.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for my copy of the game to come in, but I guess they're shipping it from like Oregon, and that state's like on fire, so it's been delayed.
Yeah, I guess so. It makes sense. So you're getting like the classic version, or is this some sort of remake?
They remade one and two and made it into one game. So like $40.
Got it. For what system?
PlayStation 4. It's just like I remembered it, but with much better graphics.
I thought you were just digital only guy.
No. Well, I got a collector's edition. It comes with like a skateboard.
I'm kidding.
I want to hang that on my wall.
You always say that to me. And you're getting physical copies of things. Anyway, Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2 was my jam in the old days.
Yeah. You should pick it up, bro. It's $40. It's got the soundtrack, all the good jams.
Right, all the songs, right, exactly. Ralph, how have you been? What's up with you?
I've been pretty good. I have to use another microphone because my microphone died.
You don't say.
Yeah, I do say. That's what I'm saying.
I do declare.
I do declare. Luckily, I just bought a new headset, so I'm using that, and it seems to be good. I'm using a bunch of software on it that's helping me modify the sound of my voice, and for better, of course, to make it sound as good as I possibly can.
Right, clearer, right?
Yep. Besides that, that's about it.
All right. Well, I mentioned last time that I got a pet, a sugar glider to be specific. And it's been 2 weeks, and it feels both simultaneously longer and like a very short time since we got her. Her name is Lilith, by the way. She is about 3 months old, a little over that, maybe another week after that. She's a still baby. Apparently, the age she's technically in is her rebellious day, so she's kind of like a teenager in her lifetime. And so rebelling a little bit, getting a lot of energy, as you may imagine. And we've been having fun with her, like with this tent we have for every night. Although lately her sleep schedule's off, so it's been like late in the day, really. Usually Lexi, because I'm at work, I'm at work, but she would put the tent up, and Lilith would just run everywhere constantly, and just wastes her energy, and it's very cute. But yeah, it's been fun being a pet owner first time, and it's been an interesting ride so far. With the specific diets and whatnot. And you just want to cuddle with it. It's a cuddle kind of a pet as well. So you just kind of constantly want to sleep with it. It's been a fun time with Lilith. So that's been going on. Otherwise, it's been kind of a just like a lot of work and no play kind of feel. Not to be.
Make Oscar a dull boy?
Yeah, exactly. I'm feeling a little dull, a little bit lately. But that's okay. That's okay. You know. Anyway, but that's basically it. We're going to move into something we do, which is called Recent Discoveries. Funny enough, though, rare enough,
yep.
Both Luke and Ralph have not been consuming any films. Assume you guys are into the sportings and the gamings and the shows, but not much in the movies.
Yeah.
Not much.
Flight Simulator, dude. It's a hell of a drug.
Has been taking your life over?
I bought a $250 flight stick and throttle control.
Oh, how's that been?
It's amazing.
Okay, well, I have three movies for you guys. And, all right.
Just mute our mics and we'll let you talk, okay?
Yeah. Facts. No, I really hope not. But you know what? I actually believe you guys when you say that more and more.
No, I actually look up the movies as you talk about them.
Well, one is the one that Ralph mentioned last time, which is Project Power on Netflix. Let me read the thing here. When a pill that gives its user unpredictable superpowers for 5 minutes hits the streets of New Orleans, a teenager, dealer, and local cop must team with an ex-soldier to take down the group responsible for its creation. Obviously, a brand new film. I think it's still in number top 10 in America. I don't know how they rate that stuff, but whatever. Project Power, which stars Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Jamie Foxx, Dominic Fishback. It's a solid, normal movie, and I agree with Ralph's sentiment, if you remember, last time, 2 weeks ago, when he talked about it. How the whole thing is a build-up to see what Jamie Foxx's power is going to be, you know, when the movie requires him to use it. You know, you think of the characters and how best to use the powers they know they're going to have once they use it the first time, and like how they can get away with the stuff. And it was just normal, kind of a normal action film overall. I would say the special effects, like if you think of X-Men or Marvel's Avengers, right? You think of, because they're similar, right? They all have powers particular to each other. It doesn't have quite as much fun mixing it up as those movies, because those movies, like, fucking, well, it's all about that, right? Like, it's all based on the source material of so many ideas created to mix them up. So if an action scene occurs, Cyclops next to Wolverine next to Storm looks a certain way, and you can expect it and be fucking awesome about it, right? Okay. This movie, unfortunately, fails at mixing powers up really well. It kind of just can handle one power at a time, and that was a little bit of a letdown. But besides that, it was a normal, serviceable movie. And that's really all I'll say about Project Power. And I'll move on here to a much more stranger movie.
I just saw the plot for it, and holy fuck.
Yeah, it's called Strange Circus from 2005. The erotic novelist Tycho is writing a morbid story of a family destroyed by incest, murder, and abuse. Her assistant, Yuji, sets on a mission to uncover the reality of this story, but the reality might be too much to bear. This is a very strange movie, as it's, the title kind of says it. It's a Japanese movie made by a filmmaker who's done movies I've seen before, and I didn't know at the time when I was watching this movie that it was the same guy. He did Suicide Club, which I don't know if you guys have seen. Have you guys seen that?
Suicide Club?
Yeah,
the Japanese movie?
Yeah, about the girls, you know, committing suicide in front of a train.
Yeah, of course we have.
Yeah, we saw that like a ton of times.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so I'm just making sure, because apparently you've never really seen The Shining until you told me today, so. So, and I thought you'd seen it. I would have said for sure, gun to my head, you know. He also did a movie called Tag, which I think Roth and I might have seen. I'm not sure.
Sounds familiar.
Right, it sounds familiar. I think we saw it in one of the Chicago International Film Festival years we did. I remember seeing it there. The first time, the only time. Anyway, but that's the director who did those movies. His name is Sion Sono. I'm fucking butchering that probably. Anyway, Strange Circus is a fucked up movie. It is technically not, I wouldn't call it a technical horror, but the stuff that's happening in there, like it says the murder, the abuse, the incest, is all really quite there and really doesn't back down from it. So, you know, if it's horrifying, could it be called a horror movie? If your answer is yes, then this is definitely a horror movie. But it's, I would say it's definitely a novella time, kind of like a drama, melodrama kind of movie. And it goes to wacky places. And I can't really describe it without both spoiling it. And yet, as much as I could describe it, it wouldn't spoil anything because there's just so much shit going on. But it's like a story within a story within a story in a way where you don't know what's reality and what isn't until the end, of course. And it makes it kind of clear. I would say really clear for me. But I can see a lot of people being confused. And I saw it with a group of friends. And it was the first time for
everyone. What kind of friends do you have?
It was a... Shut up. It was the first time for everyone there except for the person who chose it. And she was just enjoying watching us, like, trying to figure out what the fuck was going on. And half of us were definitely lost on it. But it is a mindfuck of a movie. It is very interesting, strange, fucked up. Don't watch it. It's not safe for work. It's not safe with kids. None of that stuff. So watch it as an adult, please, everyone. And the last movie here, I kind of hit that on purpose for you guys because we'll have the same thing here. I saw Tenet, the Christopher Nolan film that is out in theaters right now.
Yeah, how was it?
Dude, let me read a description here. Armed with only one word, Tenet, and fighting for the survival of the entire world, a protagonist journeys through the twilight world of international espionage on a mission that will unfold in something beyond real time. Movie starring John David Washington, who is clearly going to be a big fucking star, Robert Pattinson as well, Elizabeth Debicki,
COVID boy
Johnson, yes, COVID boy, Kenneth Branagh is in this movie as a really fucked up, like, Russian, I don't know what he is. And this is written and directed by Christopher Nolan. And it is a very good movie. Super highly recommended. I don't even want to say too much here.
Yeah, don't, because I want to kind of see it soon.
And this is like Strange Circus, I would say. It's similar in that I could tell you all about it and never spoil it for you. But I'm not going to do that either way.
Hey, I think Strange Circus just got like released on Blu-ray not too long ago.
Oh, like for the first time?
I don't know, because when I saw Audition, which I just picked up, I think I saw Strange Circus like 1 and 2 on Blu-ray as well.
Audition, everyone watch that movie. yeah, great movie. No, that's awesome. I mean, this is like I said, it was my first time. It was shown to me. It wasn't like something I sought for, but I was pleasantly enjoyed to that movie. But back to Tenet here. It is like a lot of people are calling it like a spiritual sequel or next up movie from Inception, in the fact that it's very sci-fi and it's action heavy, like Inception. And I would agree with that. And those two basic terminologies, yes, but they both have nothing to do with each other, really, beyond that point. Other than, you know, very great cinematography, great sound design. Although great sound design, it could be a mixed bag if you consider, you know, lately Nolan's movies have been kind of weird with the dialogue. You know, a lot of conflicting sounds, right? Kind of like mashing dialogue along. He did that a lot in that Dunkirk movie he did. And that other one, I can't remember the name of it right now. But so it's not like... It still follows the same through line. So it's definitely, it feels like a Nolan movie. It definitely is one. And it does not disappoint. I really, really enjoyed it. I cannot wait to watch it again. Or soon with you guys, whatever. I would love to talk about it. But that's Tenet, and that's all I've been watching. And now we're going to take a little break here. And upon returning, we will review the first film of the evening, which all these movies were picked by Luke, by the way. So, Luke, what is that first movie?
First, we're going to do Bill and Ted 3, Face the Music. And then we're gonna I think it's just Bill and Ted Face the Music.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Then after that we have Get Duked and the one and only The Shining.
The Shining. Yeah.
Want to get sued?
I was just asking for the first title, not for all of them. But it's okay. Let's do Bill and Ted Face the Music starting right now.
When your wife suggested couples therapy, do you think that this is what they had in mind?
Definitely. I mean, we're a couple of couples, right?
Bill, Ted,
enough of the delusions.
You didn't time travel.
And you didn't go to heaven and hell. Here's a real idea for you. Be role models to your daughters. Get real jobs.
Bill, we've spent our whole life trying to unite the world. And I'm tired, dude.
Ted, we have a destiny to fulfill.
Whoa! Whoa! Greetings, my excellent friend. We have a problem.
Step forward. A song created by Preston Logan, performed tonight, will save reality as we know it.
Once told, they saved the universe during a time-traveling adventure. Two would-be rockers from San Dimas, California, find themselves as middle-aged dads, still trying to crank out a hit song and fulfill their destiny. Bill and Ted, Face the Music. Starring, obviously, Keanu Reeves as Ted and Alex Winter as Bill, followed by their two daughters now, Samara Weaving playing Thea, and Bridget Lundy Payne playing Billy.
I think it's Payne.
Shut up. All right, so let's go to first impressions. I will go with mine, because yes, why not? I saw the movie twice. First time, I thought it was not that great. Thought it was like a turd. I really hated the way Keanu Reeves moved and acted in the movie. Huh. He seemed like a fucking robot, like very stiff and... Yeah, I don't know. If he had like some type of injury during the filming or something. So, huh.
Okay.
Yeah, did not care for it. And then the second time I watched it, I kind of like, it was a little bit more enjoyable. I kind of already knew what to expect, but it was still kind of okay.
Weird. Okay, yeah, well, that's weird for me anyway.
All right. Yeah. So what did you gentlemen think?
Well, I thought that this was a very good Bill and Ted movie. Mm-hmm. Now, I haven't seen the originals, and I don't care to.
What?
No, I mean, I'm not done with that sentence. I haven't seen the originals, and I don't care to for a very long time now. I saw it when it came out, or not when it came out, probably not then. But I saw it somewhere on TV along the way. And I probably saw one of them more than the other. I think it was Excellent Adventure more than the other one. But I've seen both. I barely remember them. I remember they were silly, offbeat, goofy kind of thing. And, you know, as I grew up, I never cared. I never had, like, an adoring fascination for them or, like, have a nostalgia, like, anchor to them. Has never been my thing for them. I've never been a Bill and Ted guy. Even though they're fine. I remember liking it as a kid. I was a kid, you know, totally loved it, probably. But I just haven't seen it again, and I don't care to. So with that said, from what I remember and how it felt and the style of it, the silliness of it and all that, and knowing that going into this movie, it feels exactly like those movies. And I would say that's probably a positive side, because this movie is doing a part three 25 years later. And it's and I think it does a very solid job, maybe even a very great job, at pulling a sequel to something that no one needed, and yet it feels like we kind of needed it in a weird way for those who have that emotional anchor, that nostalgic anchor to the original too. And I actually disagree with the thing about Keanu Reeves and his movements. I think he acts exactly like he did back then, except just older. I think he's acting very similar, like an older version of that Ted. If anything, he's acting even more accurate to it. I think Keanu Reeves is actually doing a lot of real good work in this, as well as Alex Winter. But I don't have, like, a lot of Alex Winter history compared to Keanu Reeves. Obviously, one made it bigger than the other, so I don't have a lot of
Winter. Alex Winter became more of a director,
right? He became he worked on behind the camera more.
A lot of documentaries.
But I haven't seen his acting, is my point. So I don't know. I can't pinpoint his involvement, is my point. So he also did a very good job, though. So I actually came out of this movie going into it thinking that it was going to be kind of like, okay. I came out of it thinking it was way better than I thought it was going to be. So yeah, I'm a fan of this movie.
Okay. I think I probably had it hyped up a little for me, for myself, whereas you probably had no expectations.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Ralph, what did you think?
We were supposed to watch this movie?
Shut the fuck up. Yeah, I know you watched it. I was there with you.
Well, how do you know I didn't learn how to fall asleep with my eyes open?
That would not surprise me in the least.
Out of the three of us, Ralph will be the one to succeed, right?
Right.
In doing that?
Yeah, 100%. That is true. All right, I'll give you my impressions, I suppose.
Your spiel.
That's what we're doing. My spiel, yeah. I felt like the movie was too wholesome. And I feel like the message, like I've always felt like the original Bill and Ted's from my, I was going to rewatch the movies, but then I just didn't get around to it. And then I was like, well, I haven't seen the movies in probably 10 plus years. At least a full run through besides whatever's been on TV and I have seen. So thinking about it, I was like, oh, well, I always thought they were just kind of like fun things that they were doing, especially the first one. And then the second one, they were just trying to, you know, get more out of it and stuff like that. So it was more like solving the problem at hand, not like, I guess the consequences weren't as grave as this one, I felt like. What's it called? And then this movie felt like it had too much, like, almost like too much plot, but at the same time, it was so loose that it didn't really matter. It was really weird. Mm-hmm. You knew the end when the movie started. Just like that, that simple. But at the same time, I felt like the movie was very wholesome. I'm gonna agree with a little bit with Luke. In the aspect of like, Keanu Reeves was, or did feel very rigid. In the movie, in comparison to what I guess I remember. At the same time, it's also I think it's in comparison to what I'm used to watching him in very, like, I guess, a tactical form and stuff like that. And this one, he feels just like, it feels like he's playing the role of Ted. It's like, I feel like I see him, I'm seeing him act more, like he's trying to act how he was before. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, yeah, he's doing the Ted movements, but I did feel like he's doing it as in like a, because he's trying to do it how Ted was doing it before, but it's a little harder now.
Them old bones.
And them aspects. It did feel like that, but at the same time, it was all right. But besides the fact that the movie was too wholesome, I just wasn't expecting that from the movie as I expected. And then I felt like it didn't let enough breathe for the other part of the movie, the other two characters in the movie, the daughters. I felt like we were just kind of rushed that. And I know the movie's called Bill and Ted, but at the same time, I just felt like we didn't get enough of that, of what we're used to. So like overall, like I still had fun watching the movie. It didn't meet my expectations, the little expectation I had for it. But I didn't have the big of an issue as Luke did, I guess. But I'm also not saying I liked it like you did, Oscar. So I guess I'm more in the middle between you two.
Oh, all right. You know, it's funny, or awesome, maybe, that Keanu Reeves is part of three trilogies. You guys know that?
What three trilogies?
John Wick.
Matrix.
Matrix, and Bill and Ted. Those are three big movies, too. They're, like, huge. I mean, granted, the Matrix is bigger, and probably John Wick, because it's more lately. But, like, damn. Just saying. That's insane, right? To think about it. He's been the main star in three trilogies.
They're all different types of movies.
They're all different, completely different types of movies.
I was just thinking about it right now.
Right? That's kind of cool. Just saying. It's kind of cool. All right.
Well, some of them are not going to... I mean, there's going to be more Matrix, though.
Probably. And I guess you can count the Animatrix. But I'm saying that as a trilogy was pre-made that way or something. Whatever. You know what I mean. As of right now, then, there's three trilogies. So, and I know they're going to make a John Wick 4. Is this a stoner comedy? No, right? They're not stoners.
No, not this one.
They're not stoners, right? Are they in the original movies? I'm trying to remember.
No, they're not stoners. They're more like slackers.
But it's not just really slackers, but they're also like kind of dull-witted, you know what I mean? Right?
100%,
That goes into the whole reason. I think for some reason, I don't know
it's
how.
Like yeah, they're dumb in every aspect of life except for music,
right? Because
that's the energy that they decided to focus on. That's the where they decided to put their energy into.
Right. I really appreciated the wholesomeness of this movie actually, because most times that kind of like Dumb and Dumber type, you know, because Dumb and Dumber is a perfect example. Maybe not. I don't know. They tend to really make fun of the main characters as much as they're showing other things like bits and sketches and stuff. But I think them being so, you know, dull-witted in a sense, in more than a sense, actually, it creates this like weird wholesomeness from them where like they can follow and chase something relentlessly, where like if they were like, you know, smarter or in general like that, more, you know, had more brain activity, maybe, I don't know if that's the right word. But if they were a little sharper in their intelligence, they probably would have given up a long time ago. I mean, and I'm talking about the core of the movie, which is them trying to find a song that unites the world, right? That's the whole Destiny gimmick of the movie, which is ridiculous, of course. But that's what the movie is. And I think, you know, it's surprising that after 25 years, you can totally believe that Bill and Ted, those characters, would chase this well into the beginning of this movie and then and beyond, because they're so relentless into their searches for what they want or they think is important or what's important to them. And along the way, you figure out that they're kind of more stable than a lot of people out there in like how they raise their kids. Very adoring children. They look stable. I mean, as much as they can be. And the wives, the family lives, they live pretty well. You know, you see all this stuff in the background of their lives when the movie starts, and you're like, I mean, these guys got it made, you know, and in a way where like they don't really care or need to point it out. I don't even know if they know themselves all that much. They just live their lives really well. You know, just happen to stumble upon this wholesome nature to their lives. I really appreciated that. And the movie kind of does that. It plays into that a little more. But do you guys want to go into spoilers, or do you guys want to talk a little more?
I mean, pretty much. I mean, what else?
I mean, there's potentially a lot, so let's find out.
When we spoil it, there'll be even more.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, let's do it. So spoilers for Bill and Ted Face the Music starting right now.
Greetings, my excellent friends.
Do we know you?
I'm Kelly.
Wait, you're Rufus's daughter.
I am, and I've been wanting to meet you my whole life.
It must be very disappointing.
Not at all. We have a problem, gentlemen. Potentially a very serious problem.
About the music?
About the music. They just want to talk to you.
Dude, I got a very bad feeling about this.
It'll be fine, Ted. They totally love us in the future, dude.
Dude, our dads are totally in trouble. I feel so bad for them. They've been doing this on their own for the longest time.
Yeah, I wish there was some way we could help them out, you know?
Yeah.
But how?
All right.
So.
Yes.
Do you think this movie is going to be a setup for another movie? Just the daughters?
I think we got it in this movie.
Yeah, but you know how they did that Indiana Jones one? And like Shia LaBeouf was supposed to take over?
Oh, in the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull?
Yeah, that piece of shit. Yeah. Do you think this is kind of it? Like, they might make different Bill and Ted movies, but with them?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe. Sure. It feels a little Kevin Smithy, like when he did with his kids with Johnny Depp.
And oh, yeah. Huh? Yeah. That guy always brings his kids in.
Yeah, it kind of feels a little like that, but I don't know. Who can say? But I think they got their movie in this one. Like, the realization that they were doing what their fathers did when they were their age.
The original movies.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Getting all these people together. They were doing all the very similar stuff, and they're all like, the way they thought about things was very interesting because it was dumb. Like, they keep going back, like, wait, Jimi Hendrix won't believe us. Let's go find Louis Armstrong. How are you going to get Louis Armstrong to believe you without, like, then showing
exactly
his influence? Yeah. But, of course, they show him a phone. And, like, oh, that's the best way to show someone. Let's show something from the future. Show him an iPhone, right, with a concert on it. That's awesome. Right. And that, you know, I kind of like that stuff. They, you know, it's not, like, great detail work or anything. It's not trying to be, like, Primer in its sci-fi time-traveliness. But it doesn't ever care to, you know. But, I mean, they go to hell, for fuck's sake. They go to hell, literally.
Yeah, it's true.
And, you know, and it's, and it was just a fun time. I mean, some of those laughs were really big laughs they got from me. It just managed to pull it out of me a couple times, here and there, obviously. And I was just so surprised by how, like, set in stone all the motivations were for everyone. And I never not bought it from anyone, you know, even the weird robot and stuff like that, you know. And yeah, it was just it was a fun little movie. That's what, just the way I saw it the whole time, even up to the end. And seeing the doppelgangers was really funny, too. It was kind of comedy. I like that a lot. Yeah.
Doppelgangers?
Not doppelgangers, but their future selves, whatever.
The future selves, yeah, yeah.
That's not what I meant.
It's funny. It's like their quest is to, you know, kind of find themselves, mm-hmm, while the daughters do what they used to do.
Right. And I was just waiting for the future versions of their wives to steal the time booth, because I knew that was going to happen. Right.
Right. That little foreshadowing.
Right. And then when they took the young wives with them earlier on, I was like, okay, I'm just waiting for it to happen. I didn't think it was going to happen in the nursing home, but it happened. And that was cool. It's just like a nice little movie. I don't know. I didn't really like it. But what did you guys think of the whole death thing, bringing death back? Did you guys like that?
Yeah, I mean, come on, you got to bring the band back together.
That's exactly what that is, yes. That's it.
I mean, because, yeah. I mean, the wives were in the original band, but they kind of, you know, they're doing wifey things, so the daughters kind of took that place.
Right.
Yeah. I also like how the movie manages to sidestep. You know, this is thing that movies do, where some movies, not like many, not even most, or anything, it's like some movies do this, where they claim this book, this song, this movie is the best in that generation, or it's one of the best ever. And it's like some made-up character about that person's best work. And they actually show you snippets of it, or they show the whole thing. And it's really hard to write really great stuff within this context of a different story. You have to make up something awesome to prove to the audience this is why that person is awesome in this movie, right? It's really hard to do that. Usually you don't write yourself into that kind of corner. But this movie was constantly teetotaling this, where, like, it's about to show it, it's not really showing it. They're like, fuck it, we can't write it in this weird space thing they're in. So they're going to go to their future selves to find the song, just skip the middleman, right? And along the way, I'm like, I wonder how they're going to do it where we don't get to hear the song, because no way you can make an awesome song that unites the world That's insane. You can't do that. You're going to beat Queen and beat all the best things, right? You're not going to do that. But the movie does it way better by doing it the way they did it with the time distortion, whatever they were doing. So everyone hears it at the same time. So it's really about unifying all the instruments and the musicians and whatever. It was more about that than it was to actually make an awesome song, you know? So I liked how the movie like sidesteps that barely, but it manages to do that. And it makes the daughters like the forefront orchestrators. I liked that. I just loved it a lot. Yeah. Huh. I had fun.
I like how, actually I didn't. Fucking Dave Grohl had to be in this goddamn movie. Fucking
oh, yeah. Dave Grohl. Dude, Dave Grohl is such a camera whore. He's in everything.
Dave Grohl would be in a documentary about Dave Grohl, talking about how Dave Grohl influenced Dave Grohl.
Yeah. Yeah, he's getting a little too camera happy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's in everything too much. And I'm not saying, I mean, whatever, man, I guess. I mean, if you have someone like Dave Grohl want to be in your movie, are you really going to say no, I guess? Maybe that's what everyone thinks of. Right? You think of Sound City, right? Or other movies? Yeah, I mean...
Movie? Sound City? Sound City?
You ever seen Sound City?
Sound City, yeah. I thought you said Silent City.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, wait, what is he doing now?
No.
But like, all these like music documentaries that I always watch, like, oh, look, there's Dave Grohl talking about how so-and-so influenced him. It's like, dude, who hasn't influenced Dave Grohl, seriously, at this point?
Right, right. So,
yeah, I think he was in a Ryan's Toy Review video. Because of his son.
Lord.
Who's that?
If you don't know who Ryan is.
If you don't know, you're good.
You are in a much better place than people who know who Ryan is.
Okay. I've definitely never heard of him ever in my life.
Good. Stay that way.
I will gladly stay that way. It sounds like a YouTube thing.
Stay that way.
Okay. Hey, what was the name of that movie where they're chasing a band because they're like trying to see this band like that they do like pop-up music and they have like the best music apparently?
Oh, are you talking about Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist?
Is that what it's called?
Is that the one?
Yeah, with
Michael Cera. Right?
Yeah, that's it.
I forgot the girl's name. Though.
Okay. Yeah. The Bill and Ted thing does a very similar thing to that movie. Because remember, in Nick and Nora, they never actually play the music from that band.
No, because they're searching for the band the whole night.
They're searching for the band the whole night, exactly.
And when they get to them, the movie ends while their band is going up on stage.
Exactly.
Right.
So I think the movie does the same thing here, where
they
do a good job because you can't mess that up. It's a huge thing, especially when you're trying to unite the world, right?
Right.
And it happens to work out that because they're not uniting the world, it's like very meta in itself. Very meta in the aspect of time travel, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
How it's like they sense state time travels, since it always were going to happen eventually. So I guess it's always been fated for Destiny, and no matter what they did, everything was going to happen anyway. Really weird. But that being said, the fact that they just never played the music, or they just did what, you know, like everyone kind of played it, and it was just like they never actually showed the whole thing. They just showed like part of it, but they did have all these other stars. It still works. The movie does do a good job of that aspect. I'll give that movie that for sure.
Yeah, yeah. No, the Nick and Nora Infinite Playlist also definitely came to my head when I was watching this movie. I'm like, are they going to do that or a worse version of that? Yeah, very good. Because you can't compete with something. You can't say it's the best band ever and then show them. And then they clearly are not the fucking best band. So can't do it. I don't know. I really like the movie. Nothing really I can say. Like I said, I'm not a Bill and Ted guy. I just don't know. There must be thousands of Easter eggs that I just won't care to know. I wouldn't know. I wouldn't know where to begin. I know that a lot of the actors they brought back is the same death guy, same the wedding in the beginning of the movie. The father's played by the same actor. I know. Not the wives, I know that, but most everyone.
Yeah, I didn't look at the wives are the same, but I think Missy was the same person.
I think they are, actually. I'll look it up.
The wives? I don't think so. I might be wrong, but that's the only one I heard that it's not them anymore. But all the other actors, you know, they brought everyone back. They brought the band back together to make this movie about bringing the band back together. So it's a good little movie. And I think for a lot of people, it'll work better for them, more than us three, definitely. Seeing that in this day and age, in this particular horrible time we're living in, so to speak, not so to speak, for real, I think a movie of this kind of levity and the wholesomeness nature of it could really maybe bring some like nice little spirits for people, brighten them up a little more than your average movie going experience these days, which is very little, obviously. I think for that reason, it's a good time to bring this movie on. Also, You know, I have nothing but goodwill for it. But like I said, I will never love this movie because, again, don't have that anchor. And I don't really care to. This is not my type of movie in general. But for its type, enjoyed it. So, any last words on Bill and Ted Facing the Music?
It's not the movie we wanted. It's the movie we needed.
Very good. That's a good way to end it. And with that,
when did this movie come out?
Never.
The original two. I'm sorry.
Oh, I don't. 25 years ago. Maybe more. Maybe less.
Yeah. No, they're not the same. They're different.
Yeah.
Wampus.
We can't really hear that mouse. All right.
Yeah, seriously, Jesus.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
You hear it skittering all over. It's all good. It's all good. So we're going to take a little break here. Upon returning, we're going to do our next movie review, which is what, Luke?
Get duked.
Ugh. Stay with us.
Kid Cudi, though. Hey.
That's it. That's all we're mentioning.
That's all you need to. That's like the movie does a great job with
I know
that.
Nothing of Kid Cudi. I know nothing of him.
You don't need to.
Only his first mixtape was good.
I don't know. He's done some other collaborations.
I mean, is he science heavy? Is that why he was spewing all that quantum stuff?
No.
No, he's a musician.
No, I know he's a musician, but is he like into that background? Like, does he have some sort of degree in quantum science that no one knows about? Or is that just bringing something funny that he can say all that science stuff? I'm like losing confidence in that sentence as I was saying it. So anyway, we're done, right? So,
yeah,
you like that?
Ah, the Highlands, one of the purest places on earth. Hardly a foot has touched. Wait, who the hell? Start!
Okay, roll call. Duncan McDonald. Yeah! Dean Gibson. DJ Beetroot. DJ Beetroot!
Can I have your real name?
Just that third one down there. William de Beauvoir.
William de Beauvoir. What did you tell?
Told him to go fuck himself.
Oh, nice!
Who are you?
Ian.
I'll meet you at the campsite at 6 p.m.
Run, here come the menace, it's a surprise.
Be careful, you don't want to get lost in the Highlands. There's danger everywhere.
Hello, boys!
An anarchic hip-hop-inspired comedy that follows four city boys on a wilderness trek as they try to escape a mysterious huntsman. Get duked. Available on Amazon Video.
What's with the pause?
Prime Video.
You have this thing with pauses. What's with you in pauses, exactly?
Pauses are good.
No.
It's for your editing, dude. I thought it was for your editing.
I don't have to edit that. No, I don't have.
I don't know.
Why are you making me work?
Hey, I don't know how the sausage is made. I just consume it.
No, you're making it right now.
Yeah.
Well.
So, Get Duked, originally titled Boys in the Wood, is a 2019 British black comedy film written and directed by
your mama,
Ninian Dhoff, in his feature directorial debut. I got that off of Wikipedia.
Yeah, it clearly sounded like you were reading off something.
Released by Amazon Studios on Prime Video on August 28th, 2020. So it's available for your viewing pleasure on Amazon Prime Video.
Right, so Prime Video is who's at fault here. That's what you're saying.
Okay, so first reactions. I think I went last time. So, hey, Oscar, tell me how you felt about Get Duked.
Mm, so you want the veggies first, huh? I thought this movie kind of sucked. Overall, in general, throughout, I never vibe with the comedy. I think not even once. I think there was a few funny moments I got. But, you know, it felt longer, too. How long is this movie? I'm sure it wasn't that long, but maybe...
I don't even remember. It kind of flew by for me.
No, yeah.
Hour 27?
That sounds about right.
27. No, it was just like I just could not find the motivation to care or the care in to motivate anything in the movie, unfortunately. And that goes with, like, you know... In general, when it comes to, I guess this could be like a stoner comedy, kind of, because there are a bunch of, or like slackers. We talked about Bill and Ted earlier about that, the differences and stuff, but I think they're more like slackers, right? And but they're all
these guys, definitely they're delinquents.
Delinquents, right? Yeah, they call them delinquents. Who are out to do this wilderness trek thing? By force, I should say. I found none of them. Like I never cared about any of their survival. And I think you need that in order to enjoy the movie in any capacity. I never could do it. So for me, I didn't appreciate it very much. That's what I think.
Okay. Ralph?
This is a movie.
Okay.
What? That's it. Are you pulling a Luke?
You like that, right? No, I guess it was, I don't know. It did feel a little long. And I also did feel like, I didn't, I guess, care enough either, right? The movie didn't do a good enough job to make me care. I just felt like they were trying to make them feel like they were funny and obviously not liked, but at the same time, you're like, okay, I guess I could see this, but it never went there. And you were just like, oh. Oh, okay. I just never felt like I never felt too attached to the characters. But besides that, some of the movie's aspects was still fun. I mean, I had fun watching some of the movie, but it did feel a little long, even though it's under an hour and a half, under 90 minutes. Even with like credits and everything, so technically. Yeah, I don't know. Just it wasn't really my cup of tea, even though I still enjoyed aspects of the movie.
You don't even drink tea. Anyway,
I do drink
tea. So, Luke, I think you have the opposite effect. Reaction.
Well, I do agree with Ralph. It is a movie. And I think I found it a little bit more enjoyable than you guys did. At first, I went into it, I was just like, okay, why did I choose this piece of shit? But the characters actually kind of grew on me. In a small way, so I kind of enjoyed their little story.
Okay.
It's not like nothing I'd go out of my way to rewatch, but if it was ever on again, I'd probably watch it. Like a 3 out of 5 stars.
Oh, okay. Okay. No, well, don't get me wrong. I would always prefer if people enjoy movies, even if I don't enjoy them.
Right.
It's always a better thing to, like, you know, some movies are like people love to hate. This movie doesn't meet that requirement for me necessarily. Like a good bad movie doesn't do that for me. But I'm glad that you enjoyed it, Luke, or someone is enjoying it out there in the world. It does feel like kind of like a low rent. No, I don't want to say that. I was gonna do a comparison to Trainspotting, only in that a group of friends. They're all like bad people. So to speak, they're all like, well, not good people is my point. Maybe not like bad, capital B. And obviously that movie also filmed in the same country. So I found some similarities, but they're not similar at all. They're completely different. But the whole slacker idea and, you know, this whole thing with the, I don't know, man, I think this movie tries like so many things, tries to do a lot of things surprisingly for a 87 minute movie. And I think in doing so, it doesn't, I wasn't satisfied on any of them because there's so much thrown at it. And this includes like, without spoilers, of course, this includes this involvement with local police officers and includes a certain sibling of a certain hunter. It includes farmhands, like the farmers in the area, and that weirdo guy with the van, that one that drops them off in an initial place. And then, I really thought it would be about, I mean, they do show the four boys a lot. But for some reason, I feel like it lacked like actual chemistry or actual bonding moments, I feel, even though they kind of technically did. I felt like it was still lacking some sort of teamwork, because the movie makes fun of teamwork. Some sort of team up substance, right?
Before thing, right?
Right. I feel like it's missing something, even though they're the main actors and they're in it a lot. I don't know. I felt like it was still like forgot to put something in there that I would. I don't know something. I don't know. It didn't feel like it was like this group of delinquents getting together kind of thing. You know, it didn't feel like. whatever. Like, what's that movie? I don't know. There's a lot of movies where people hunt others. Like, whatever. I can't think of them right now. But, yeah, you know, and same thing with the acting. I felt like it was, like I said, not my cup of tea, like Rob said, but, like, it's not my type of comedy. And not only did I not care for the jokes, but everyone's kind of ridiculous all the time. So I never took anything seriously. And I'm not saying the movie...
I don't think you're supposed
to. No, I know that. I was about to say that. Like, I know the movie's not trying to do that. But in doing so, like, if I didn't, like, laugh, then... If I didn't care and I didn't laugh, then what am then I got nothing, you know? So, but the premise, though, and, you know, it's been done, you know, here and there before. The premise is fine, though. It's a good idea, like the idea to send delinquents or not. No, I don't want to say that. They don't do it for that, but they kind of do. The idea of these delinquents, like, being forced to deal with nature and in doing so have to be hunted by this ultra-rich asshole played by Eddie Izzard in a mask. Hunting them down and stuff, but it's a good concept. But like I said, I don't know, something about it just didn't satisfy me by the end. So I don't know what else you guys want to say pre spoilers. Figure maybe Luke should sell on it more if you got something to sell on.
No.
You don't before spoilers.
Yes.
No. Mm. Okay, well, we'll do it in spoilers. Do you have a favorite thing, like, character? You have a favorite character?
DJ Beetroot.
Yeah, I would say that has to be
everybody. As much as I hated him in the beginning, he grew on me.
I mean, they were all pretty annoying, but he was the least annoying by the end. So I guess I feel the same way. I like how Beetroot, people thought that he was into farming, like, beets. I like how that came into the thing. Raph, do you have a favorite?
I feel like the movie makes the big turnaround for DJ Beetroot. But I overall like the just how dumb what's it called? What is it, Dean?
Sorry, I don't know who that is.
Dean Duncan.
Which one was it? I'm trying to think if it's Dean or Duncan. Nah, Duncan. Duncan, the guy with the terrorist watch list.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I just overall like how dumb, like just how dumb he was. But at the same time, like, street smart, I guess. Or weird smarts.
Yeah, so, you know that first time how, like, I don't know what I thought of the scene, but when they were trying to evade the huntsman, right? They make this supposed, like, explosive, right? And they throw it at him. And it turns out that it fails. And then they make up this other, like, flying disc thing, right? To, like, blow it up.
That crazy contraption, yes.
Yeah. And I'm like, is this like a setup for MacGyvers? Like, mini MacGyvers or something? Are they going to be doing this throughout the movie? Which would be cool. They didn't. But it was just interesting that what they had in their pockets managed to save them, to save their skin a little bit, even though it was so ridiculous. And there's no way they could aim that well, but, you know, they made it. And I was like, it feels like MacGyver. Like MacGyver's, like, fucked up children, you know, are doing this. But we can get into spoilers just for the hell of it for DJ Beetroot, I mean, for Get Duked, starting right now.
He nearly killed us! We got your weapons. We're doomed. I'll make a bomb.
Where's the explosion?
Yeah, the whole point of a bomb.
Mr. Kalile!
I've never seen a murder before. I'm homeschooled.
Explore the wars, cause discord.
This is our number one case now.
Here, take some of these. You'll feel fucking invincible.
Your generation, you're always complaining, always saying you are the victim.
Fuck off, Grandad!
Chance two, chance three.
We have to stop them.
Yeah, blow super high.
You won't get away with this.
We always do.
Let's finish this.
When I say yeah, holy shit, you say duped. Yeah.
Nothing ever happens in the Highlands.
Oh yeah!
All right. Did you like the rapping, Luke?
As much as I thought I was going to hate it at first, when they had that whole like barn scene and everything, I was like, this guy's actually not bad.
Yeah, I think I said
the
same thing.
It was fun. Yeah. It was fun to watch.
Yeah, I said the same thing, that he wasn't bad, right? He's not like amazing or anything. I'm not saying that, but
I think what made that scene fun is that everyone's on psychedelics.
That and like the farmer's like really into it too.
Yeah, really.
Which I thought of like, oh, this guy's gonna try to fucking murder him, but no,
he's digging. Right. I thought he was entering some sort of Midsommar situation there, because you know they're all like in their own little worlds over there, the farmers. But yeah, no, that was nice. That was good. I guess some of the rapping stuff wasn't bad. I expected way worse. You know, it's funny how there's like two surprisingly better rappers than you can think of in two different movies I saw, which is this one and Project Power. Had some like rapping by characters who want to be rappers, and they're surprisingly better than you think they should be for a movie pretending to be something else. You know, so that's two in a row, which is kind of funny. And in one week I saw, but yeah. Anyway, I digress. Yeah, what'd you think of the like all the isms? Because everyone has like their own like side story, right? DJ Beardwood is the obvious one. Duncan's the one who was trying to prove his smarts, right? And then the other guy wants to be, I don't want to say wants to do teamwork, but he wants to be part of a group of friends. Like
because he doesn't have a real friend.
Right, yeah. Right. And what's the fourth guy we're missing? What's his deal? They all have a deal.
He's the weird guy who was homeschooled. Ian.
No, that's the one that wanted to be friends with people, right? No, I'm talking about the other one. I'm missing one of the delinquents. I'm trying to think because they all have their own, like, struggle, right? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I'm trying to remember what his was. Right. Fuck if I remember.
Dean. I think you're talking about Dean.
I don't remember the names either. I just saw his, like, a
couple. Yeah, yeah. It's Dean, Duncan,
and DJ Beardroop.
And DJ Beardroop. Those are the original three.
And Ian.
And then Ian is the guy who comes in.
Right. Well, whatever his motivation was. What did you guys think of the way the movie handled that, them coming together on those little problems they all had with each other? Like coming in together to save the day, so to speak, by saving themselves, really. Do you believe this guy's, like, this group grew at all? Is my point, I guess. Because the movie has to do something, right? It has to progress, has to change. Did the characters change for you guys? Is my point. Oh, my question.
I mean, I think they
did. Maybe Ian did.
Yeah, I think
he gained friendship.
He did for sure. Yeah. But I think they kind of all did with like kind of knowing their roles. I felt like Dean was more like the leader guy, even though they kind of let DJ Beatroot kind of at the same time. But he wasn't. He just happens to be the guy with, I guess, like he's like the biggest, a bigger idiot because he's with comes from money. And stuff like that, and a proper education. And Dean and Duncan have obviously been shat on their whole. So I just feel like obviously DJ Beatroot can probably for sure grows the most. But overall, they kind of just like I feel like they established their roles a little bit more in comparison to from the beginning when you just get the explanation of who they are.
All right. Well, you know, I don't have like a favorite scene or anything. Like, what did you guys think of Eddie Izzard or the bad guys in this movie? Like the whole idea of these rich
established. Yeah, I kind of had a feeling that was going to be it. They're trying to like weed out these, you know, these slacker kids and that kind of thing. You know, weed out the weak,
make a better.
But then, right. Yeah. But I think it was like Dean Hill that like speech to him, like how. You know, you guys fucked everything up for us, and we're dealt like this shitty hand, and we got to make the best of it. And he's like, I know I'm not going to go to college, and I'm just going to be like some, I forgot what job he said.
Oh, like fisherman or something, right?
Yeah, like something. Some like some dead end job.
Right.
That's all I have in like for my future. But you guys had it much better than we did, and you guys fucked us. So that was interesting.
Right, a little political there.
It was very political, and I was like, ugh. And I had a feeling that it was going to happen, but I was like, whatever. Like, everything's got to be political nowadays. So.
Well, everything can be seen also politically because of the times we're in, you know, like, it's not like, it could be one or the other, you know what I'm saying? Because sometimes movies are doing that on purpose, or very much so, but sometimes we tend to see it if we read it every day on Twitter and Facebook and stuff, right? So, yeah, it's like biased. What do you call it? Something biased. I don't have a lot on this film anymore, because I really don't want to bash it either. I didn't, I don't have...
It's not worth bashing because it's, you know, doesn't deserve to just be shit on. Yeah. It wasn't that bad.
Right. You know, it wasn't that bad. But you're right. It's like, you know, it gets fun to hate Waterworld, right? But it's not as much.
What? It's your favorite movie.
No one gets this joke. No one understands what you're saying.
I get it.
No, I know. But, you know, the audience.
We're doing
this for the audience, you fuckers.
Oh, okay.
Well, Waterworld is Oscar's favorite movie, but he always denies it, audience. No, now you're in the loop.
Not true. No, it's like an inside joke that no one thinks is funny but you two.
I don't think it's funny. I think it's funny that Luke still finds it funny. So in a way.
Oh, Jesus. Well, I've never cared about that. So anyway, so that's all I got on it. But like I said, I want to bash it. It's not worth bashing. You were saying that. Blah, 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 blah. Skip all that. Now, you guys have anything you want to add or say or make sure we don't forget about that you want to mention? Favorite scene, something like that? I don't know.
One more time. Sorry.
Anything else?
Anything else to add? I found some stuff funny. Like when they kill their teacher or their woodsman guide or whatever. That was funny to me. That was like, they just go right at it, you know?
Right.
And they don't even decide to, like, you know, give them benefit of the doubt or anything. So that was funny. And then also how that scene ends later with them trying to, with the car rolling off the cliff.
Right.
Eventually it'll crash or something, you know?
Yeah, that's the one time that I did laugh is when the car went backwards. And it makes no sense. I don't know how it still saved them at the end, but that's the movie logic. But that was interesting. That was funny. I like that scene too. I think that's all I got. Anything else, guys?
No. Like I said, it's available on Prime Video.
Yes.
You know, I try not to phone it in.
I am not a shill.
Yes, you are a shill. But I, you know, besides that. I try not to let things phone it in, you know, when it comes to a movie review or whatever, but I really have nothing on this movie. Not much anyway. So that's it for Get Duked with an exclamation point. We're going to take a little break here before we review our last film of the evening, which is what, Luke?
The Shining.
The Shining.
Shut up. You want to get sued?
It's The Shining. You keep saying that. No one finds it amusing the fourth time around. You know that, right?
It's a classic Simpsons reference.
Yeah, but not when you beat it over the head.
Yeah, that's all right.
No, nope. Not all right. Not all right. Anyway, stay with us.
Come out, wherever you are. By the hair on your chin. Then I'll huff, and I'll puff, and I'll blow your house in.
No! is Johnny.
A family heads to an isolated hotel for the winter, where a sinister presence influences the father into violence, while his psychic son sees horrific forebodings from both past and present. Oh, past and future.
Past and present.
Yeah, whatever.
He opens his eyes. Boom, the present.
Ta-da! The Shining.
Yeah,
by Stanley Kubrick. Written by Stephen King. Screenplay by Stanley Kubrick. Starring the one, the only, the man we are doing this for, Jack Nicholson, as part of our Jack Nicholson marathon. And I believe this was my pick, right?
Yes.
And it's a great thing that I picked it because I realized watching this movie that I've never watched this movie.
Which I don't see how that's possible.
It's because I've always seen I've seen the clips that you need to see from this movie. And based on seeing all these clips, I kind of pieced it in together, and I'm like, okay, I know what this movie's about. I was off.
Yeah.
Clearly. But
it was my first real watching of The Shining. So, who went last?
Yeah, so I think Ralph is next.
Ralph, what are your impressions?
Am I next?
You Did are. What are your impressions of The Shining? I think you just saw it today again, right?
So well, we're not doing The Shining yet. Remember, we're doing Jack Nicholson first, and then we'll talk about the movie.
Right.
Okay, fine.
Dumbass. So anyway.
Bite me. I think Jack Nicholson did a standout job. Broke out of his role to do something, you know, more menacing, and I think it worked great. What else?
Okay. Well, I'll give you the Jack that I think we got a little bit of everything in. So what we've seen so far from Jack Nicholson, we got this this guy who is obviously has been or used to be or could still be is charming and charismatic in the beginning of the movie, and you know, but at the same time very very much has inner demons. And then and then you have him as he progresses through the movie, obviously fall down this rabbit hole of kind of just like losing his mind, and obviously further into fake alcoholism because he's not really drinking alcohol, but he is, I guess. To see that change in him, and then go from this like menacing, menacing threat in the movie. Is really cool to see from him. I think you see a little bit of everything we've seen so far, where he can be cool, calm, and collected, but at the same time blow up at any minute. And then you see him in like his full like kind of ravenous. I can't think of the word I want to use, but basically. How uncontrolled he is at the end. Oscar?
I think this might be the one movie we shouldn't have picked.
Really?
Yeah. I think this is the one that relates to the least to a marathon when you talk about like Jack Nicholson and his performances. I think The Shining so matters only and exclusively to Stanley Kubrick as a director, that I don't think there's I'm not saying it requires no talent, but I honestly feel like this goes hand in hand, his acting, his performance in this movie, goes hand in hand with the film itself, you know, which is the part like the next section after we talk about Jack Nicholson, we'll be talking about the movie. And I guess what I'm trying to say is that I think, because would you guys know a lot about the background of this movie at all?
In terms of
anything?
No.
Okay. Well, then what were you going to say if you were in terms?
Well, I know there's a documentary called Room 237 that you talked about.
Yes.
but I never watched that.
Okay.
I know there's a sequel kind of called Doctor Sleep that I still haven't watched either.
Oh, wow. You really haven't, huh? Okay. Well, that sucks because they're all good movies right there. Ralph, have you seen Room 237?
No.
Okay. Well, it might still be available if you guys, I rented it yesterday on iTunes. So, and I saw it yesterday. So maybe it's still there if you guys want to check it out. Anyway, I saw it for this movie. So anyway, so this is my 40th time, right? Watching this movie, at least. I saw it so many times. And I think that this time and the last few times, Jack Nicholson is just acting like 10 levels above himself. Like he's going, he's cranking it to 11 every single time, even when he's ordering a sandwich, when he's fucking, you know, like walking past his wife or his child or anything, you know, especially once the movie gets into where it's just a family in the Overlook and not like anyone else, no interviewers, no manager, no boss, no nothing, no cook, right? If you take once they're in solitude in the building, he is constantly amped up. Like he's overacting every single chance, every single frame. He's overacting. He can't look out the window without looking like a psychopath. And I think that has to do with, I mean, don't get me wrong, Jack Nicholson's face totally helps. He clearly has a face of a menacing person. We know he's got it in this movie, you know. But I have this theory about Stanley Kubrick and how he treats his actors and how he treats stars in his movies that may go along with what I think is The Shining. And The Shining might be the only example where Jack Nicholson's performance is the least, the thing that the thing that matters the least when it comes to what he's capable of doing, because he's just so ridiculous in the movie on purpose, obviously. Obviously, I'm saying all this on purpose. It's not like he didn't know what he was doing. He was clearly directed this way. But I think it's not to service any like, I don't think there's any room for him to actually act, is my point. Not like the last three movies we talked about. I mean, you know, with One Flew Over, Chinatown, and Five Easy Pieces. You know, I feel like those movies, he's actually able to perform and emote. I feel nothing for him in this movie. Everything that I feel for him in this movie comes from the external forces of the movie itself, not from his performance. And I feel like this movie is, I feel like it's hard for me to start talking about his performance in any real way because I think it's over the top. And I don't know if I can judge a character, an actor's merit on that, if it's meant to be like ridiculous, you know? I'm not sure if I'm making my point really well, but that's what I feel about it. But with that being said, though, he's acting the shit out of whatever the hell he's trying to do. And that's obviously being over the top and murderous and intense and venomous and hateful and spiteful and jealous and all these things. He is doing those things to the nth degree. But yeah, he does all that, I guess, really well, if that's the point of the movie, and which it is. It just feel like, you know, like I don't know what to think. I mean, I don't think it grows him as an actor at all. This movie does not, I mean, it grew him in audiences. Yeah, he became a staple in homes after The Shining, probably. You know, right. Everyone knows him from The Shining. I get it. But like, I don't think it gave him any nuance or any step forward or any kind of like learning thing. Or I don't think he gained anything acting wise from being in The Shining. That's what I think. What do you guys think?
Yeah, no.
Wait, yeah or no?
I think that's like a whole new level of Jack Nicholson.
Oh, okay.
Like, he really went out of his way. Like, I think it's like one of the best things he did.
Okay. Well, there you go. I mean, this definitely, I'm definitely the minority thing.
You are.
Because a lot of people do. Every time I say, you know, every time we talk about it with other people, like Jack Nicholson, like, oh, yeah, I loved him in The Shining. Like, everyone says that. Like, it's a very common thing to associate him to as, like, his best performance. One
of
his,
I can see why now. It's one of his best fucking movies.
Right. No, I mean, I can see why you say that completely, 100%. What did you think of his performance? Like, is that like over the topness that I'm talking about? Did you see that or did you not see that?
Yeah, it was spectacular.
Okay. So you loved it. So you knew and felt that it was over the top and you thought it was a great portrayal.
Like of how he was supposed mm-hmm. to be. Yeah. Yeah. Like he was fucking breaking down and
I would say this though, his eyebrows were doing half of the acting.
Oh, dude, those eyebrows were wonderful.
Well, they were really wonderful. I will say that.
She got an Oscar.
He didn't for this movie, but I don't think they nominated anything for The Shining, as far as I remember, anyway. But yeah, no, his eyebrows do a lot of the work. They do a lot of the heavy lifting for him, because he really pulls it off. And this is where, like, the start of his bad guy career really goes, right? Wouldn't you say that, guys?
I don't know. I don't know where his career goes.
Well, it goes into Batman and, you know, later on The Departed. And then you think
of, he played Batman?
No, he played the Joker. Yes. I'm just saying that in case someone actually thinks you're being honest out there, because we don't know, Luke. So anyway.
Probably, yeah.
He also played the Wolf, right? The Witches of Eastwick. I know. Like, bad guys everywhere is my point, right?
The Witches of Eastwick? What's that?
It's a movie. It's just, what? Why would I say a title and then you assume it's not a movie? It's a movie. It's a movie with someone's gonna kill me out there. Three big actors. What the fuck are the names? Sorry, witches. And he plays like the devil or the one that does the something. I don't remember anymore. It's been so long. It's like a dark comedy kind of. Whatever. Watch it. Yeah. Anyway, this starts his really bad guy career. After this, it seems like, especially, you know, within the 80s itself, we're going to get into Batman next, I think, is the next one. And he plays the main bad guy, so there you go. Anyway, so
what? It's got Cher.
That's right. Cher.
Susan Sarandon mm-hmm. and Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah, that's right. The big actors, yeah, exactly. Yeah, have you seen The Rough?
Yes.
Okay.
I knew what you were talking about.
Good. I'm glad someone did. So what else? Anything else you guys want to talk about regarding Jack Nicholson's performance in this movie at all whatsoever before we get into the movie itself? Because the movie itself, it's
what I think what Jack Nicholson's performance does, though, is that it heightens the movie's like horror aspect of it. I mean, it's like him having this like look and just like all going all out, especially like if you were to look at it from the perspective of the kid and the wife, like, yeah, it's fucking creepy as shit, you know, like in a stuck in a hotel, just them three technically. And I don't know, like, I think it adds in a horror element because he's going all out. I think it heightens it. In my opinion.
No, yeah, that's totally valid. I mean, that's valid completely. 100%. That's what a lot of people say.
Right.
You know, I would say that one thing it does add a lot to is the confusion nature of the movie. Like, why does uh-huh. he have to act that way over something so trivial or something else before it gets to the murder stuff, obviously. But,
well, it's because you're not married with children. That's why. You don't know what's going to trigger him. I'm just kidding.
Honestly, you could have said, I'm not kidding at all, and I would have believed that too.
But I could have. Right. Yeah. But it is something that's funny, because like I feel like I've heard this from people who are parents, like dads, I guess, specifically. It's like sometimes it's like it's shitty to it's like the little things the little things kind of like set you over because you've already been dealing with everything else, and then you come home to deal with one little thing, and then you're like, I got to deal with this shit too. Like, what the fuck? It's more like that. Mm-hmm. I've heard people complain many times, you know, and it's hard and it's easy to get into fall into that trap, but it's also just like, if you're self-conscious or self-aware about it, you just kind of just like, it is what it is. Like,
yeah.
Don't let it get to you too much.
I hear you.
You know, but
yeah, there's no,
it's like,
All right, so I wouldn't say let's get into the movie itself, because I have a lot for you guys on this movie. I mean, we'll get to the color of it.
But, oh, boy.
But I want to ask Luke, since it's technically his first time, what do you think, what the fuck is going on in this movie, Luke?
Dude, I have no fucking clue. Like, I'm a shit. Okay, so it's a hotel. It's built on a Indian burial, I believe. Mm-hmm. There was a guy back in the day who fucking offed his wife and two fucking girls. And I guess there's like ghosts in there and shit, or there's some hauntings. there's a whole lot of shit going on in this fucking movie.
Okay.
It's like, yeah. And like, and I looked into a couple things that I knew about the movie beforehand when I thought I saw it. And I was like, oh yeah, this kind of makes sense. Now that I actually saw it, I'm like, oh, this makes real sense. Like, the layout of the hotel makes no fucking sense.
Okay, I have something about the layout. I have a lot about the layout of the hotel. It's insane. It's amazing how much you get of the space. The Kubrick spent so much time showing you the space of this fucking hotel.
Right, yeah.
Shows you different floors, different like patterns, lots of different kinds of rooms. The movie takes its time. Mind you, the movie takes its time to do a lot of what looks like mundane, stupid shit. Like, you know, from Danny trekking on his trike, right? To like the cook, what's his name? I'm forgetting his name right now. The cook, Scatman Crothers.
Halloran.
When Halloran is just like listing all the things that are in the freezer and all the things in the pantry, I'm like, why am I listening to this? Why do we care?
So you know.
Wait, no.
All the good stuff that they have.
That's not the reason it's there. But I'm saying is that the movie's spending all this time, you know, doing that, right? And I'm like, there's got to be some sort of like symbolism going on, some sort of like some subtle thing, maybe something subliminal. A lot of people attribute Kubrick with working with subliminal stuff. But what did you get from, what did you look into, Luke, regarding the layout of the hotel? What did you find out? Do you remember?
Yeah, the apparently like the way that they shot it, like was supposed to make like the layout of it is like not actually possible or something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It was weird.
For me, the biggest example is in the beginning, actually, where we see the, I forgot his name, this boss's name, you know, when he's being interviewed for the job. He walks.
Oh, Mr. Ullman or something?
Ullman, that's right. He goes from the front and he's walked over. The movie walks him from the front or wherever he was sitting to the office, right? And they talk. And this is where they hear the story about the other previous caretaker who killed his family. The process of him walking, and then when you compare it with other scenes, especially later on in the third act when Wendy is running mad scared throughout the hotel, mm-hmm. You see that the office, Ullman's office, is actually in the middle of the hotel, like it's landlocked. But it has this giant bright window with a tree and sunlight coming through it. And it makes no sense. Hmm. Because there's no way a window would be there if the layout is accurate. You know what I'm saying? Like Kubrick built some sort of like impossible room that makes no sense. That doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't lead to an office, certainly. And definitely not an office that would have this window with all this light coming through it. You know? And I just thought that, like, why do all that? Right? Why expend the effort to make... one could say, like, you know, the subtleties of he's making a labyrinth within the labyrinth, right? Like, the labyrinth inside the hotel is just like the labyrinth that's actually outside in front of it, right? But there are other things that make no sense either, like the way he would match cut a dissolve. I don't know if you guys know what dissolves are, right?
Where the what?
A dissolve in movies? It's when one...
Fade to black?
No, it's like where fade...
Star wipe?
Nope, shut up. Is when you fade not to black, but when you fade into the next scene and suddenly two scenes are playing at the same time, overlapping each other for a moment before the other one takes over. That's a dissolve. And the movie has like tons of those. And some of those are actually eerily weird and like matches certain other shapes and the way the camera is moving at the time. And like he did a lot of work to orchestrate all this. He shot different hotels in front and some of the exterior stuff, obviously, Kubrick did, in different hotels to show exactly the right angle that you wanted to see in a single dissolve. But every single one of those dissolves, it seemingly led nowhere, but obviously it must lead somewhere. And that's where people are like fascinated by the movie because they're trying to figure out, especially by this time in 1980, Kubrick was established as fuck. He had done A Clockwork Orange. He had done A Space Odyssey. He had done Paths of Glory and a bunch of other, you know, The Killing. So he was established already, and people knew him to be taken seriously. And not only seriously, but this guy's a smart filmmaker, even though he's impossible to work with. You know, people knew all this of him already by the time The Shining came out. So, like, people were really trying to understand The Shining. And I think it's supposed to be a paradox, like a puzzle box movie that you can't solve. It's kind of like Mulholland Drive, maybe, or like something like that, right? Where it's more ethereal. You, like, there's no like crazy horror happening necessarily, but you're supposed to constantly feel dread and horror regardless. What do you think, Ralph? About this?
I agree. I'm here. I agree. The movie is, especially with the layout and everything, it is kind of fucked up. And then what you're saying is the way Kubrick is presenting it is almost like, I guess it's like he did it for the sake of not movie magic, but for the fact that it's like to portray this this feeling of like it's like a labyrinth kind of thing, almost like the maze at the end of the movie. Mm-hmm. And that's how it is on the inside, or that's how it feels it can be on the inside, especially when you see when you have Danny riding his trike around the area, and you're just like when do these corridors end? Like,
right?
Like, you're like, how is he still going? And he's like on the same floor. Like, what do you, I don't know. I'm very lost.
Right. Yeah. But, yeah. It's confusing. So I want to talk a little bit about Room 237. Which again is a documentary made by Rodney Asher, if my memory serves.
I want to watch it.
Pretty solid documentarian. He likes doing documentaries and horror stuff, not horror movies only, but his big breakthrough, if you want to call it that, his breakthrough was Room 237. And then he did a movie on sleep paralysis, for example, a documentary on that too, and another documentary on Shudder that I haven't seen that I want to check out. Anyway, regardless. In Room 237, it's, it talks about, in the opening, like it says off the bat, like, no one in regarding the filmmaking process, no Kubrick's people, or no one's opinions or facts are based on them. Like, this is all, like, theory, fan-based theories and stuff, right? And the movie really gets into 9 theories about what The Shining really is about, like hidden behind the scenes kind of thing. Like, what's The Shining about in their perspective? And there's a lot of ridiculous ones. Like, some of them are legit leaps that I don't see in my logic. Like, I can't see it the way they do. And some of them are more plausible. Like, some of the details they give you in that movie, details and whatever they give you, I'm like, okay, I can see that. I can see definitely if you are the type to see that kind of thing, that will jump out at you, and that you would say, hey, this movie is about that. And my favorite one probably is the one that's about the genocide of the American Native Americans by the settlers in America, right, when they came in. Like, the movie is about that. And that goes along with, you know, with the fact that the hotel's built on a new burial ground, they had to repel attacks, that a lot of, like, strange historical headpieces and statues are in the background of scenes that involve Native Americans that correlate to the genocide of it, and how it's used to show someone being honest or dishonest to the camera at a certain given time, like in a subtle way. So, like, I figured, like, in some of that stuff was really cool. Some of it was like how Stanley Kubrick was, he faked the moon landing. You know, another one is like, it's like in all these insane things. And in one of them, they get into the dissolve scenes, the scene dissolves, and how someone played the movie backwards and forwards at the same time, dissolving into each other at the same time, right? And the parallels that they saw were very interesting and kind of cool. It's like, well, it's like listening to the Beatles' White Album backwards or something like that. It's one of those things that you do to see if there's some sort of hidden meaning behind it. And that's what they did for The Shining. And the idea of the movie really is showing you that this movie is this, like, unending question mark that people love trying to answer, and that it'll never go away. And that maybe that's the point that Kubrick is kind of doing. It's like he's almost like trolling us in a weird way. And I don't know. You know, I don't know who can say what's right or not, because he's dead, and we will never, and not that he would ever tell you anything, but in the VHS of The Shining, Ralph, if you remember back then when I bought it, when we were watching it, the movie actually, the tape itself, would start with the making of the movie. Do you remember this, Ralph?
Yeah, I vaguely do. Yeah, okay. I do vaguely remember.
It was really weird because the movie will start with the making of The Shining before showing you The Shining.
Really?
Yes. It's
on the good old VHS,
on the VHS. I still have it somewhere.
Huh.
And it's uncanny.
No doubt.
It's definitely unheard of because that ruins the movie if you've never seen it, if you start watching that, right? Because it starts off with the scene and not in the bathroom, I don't think, but it's with Shelley Duvall, and she's like running out of the hotel during the winter storm, I think trying to get Danny from the labyrinth, I think around the very end. And, you know, it's potentially ruined the whole movie for you. But you get a sense of like this contention in the fucking set, like especially with Shelley Duvall, I would say, where Stanley Kubrick is just a real asshole to everyone. He's very strict. He knows exactly what he's doing and how he wants it. And that's kind of the point, is that he will never stop shooting until you get it right. And it was kind of cringy to watch some of these people like tiptoe around him in the making of. Now they cut it around as much as they could, but still. And but if you want to check it out, maybe it's on YouTube, but it's not on any DVD or not on the iTunes that I got, so it wasn't a special feature there. But it might prove might give you some light on it. But man, this movie could be about anything. Luke could say it's about, I don't know, otters, and you could find an argument that'll support that a little bit, probably. And that's the whole point, is that it's really about whatever you want it to be. And that if you take it at face value, it really doesn't make sense. Like, not everything tracks. Especially when you get to the very end, which seems like it's put there to fuck with you. The ending meaning, like, the last shot, right? Where you see the photograph, 1921, and you see, you know, Jack Torrance in the front of that picture, you know, 60 years before, right? Or whatever. And it's really weird. And why is that there? What does that prove? Do you guys have any answers to these questions? Or do you guys are content with not knowing? Are you guys content?
Content.
With not knowing, I mean? Or do you have?
I mean, maybe, like, it'd be nice to know, but I wouldn't be, like, actively seeking these answers, because maybe there's no real answer for it.
Well, the thing I'm saying is, if you know, I mean, I'm not saying if you know for sure, but do you have an answer that you're satisfied with?
Meh.
No. Okay, I'm just asking. I don't have one. I'm just asking. What about you, Rob?
You don't have an answer you're satisfied with?
Me?
Yeah, you.
Oh, I mean, I read the book, and obviously, by the way,
me too.
It has nothing to do with the book. There could not be more different. I will say that. I don't take the book to heart. Like, what the book is about and what the movie is about is not the same.
Yes.
The location is the same. The characters are the same names, but they're not the same. You know? Like, I mean, arguably, The Shining, besides it being about this boy who has a special gift, right, that gets entangled with a dark force that seeks out his gift. This is the book I'm talking about. The Shining, of course, and that it leads into him barely escaping with his mom with his life, but his dad leaves behind death, right? His death comes with it, with this hotel, right? Like, that's, and also the movie's about alcoholism as well. Alcoholism, yes, is a big thing in The Shining, the book. And I would say that while those things are in this movie, Ralph, in the Stanley Kubrick movie, I don't think it's about those things at all. You know? Or at least not just that, and it seems to be more into other things.
Yes.
Is my point.
I would say so, yeah. Yes.
Like, they don't have the hedge. There's no maze, for example. The maze is made up completely in the movie. There's no maze in the book, for example.
That's amazing.
I'm done. I'm done.
Yeah, but they don't have the hedge animals, for example.
Yeah, that was really scary. That was a cool chapter.
And that fucking book was creepy. Just reading it was creepy.
That was very good. I love that scene. Or that chapter. Yeah. Do you have an answer, Ralph? Do any of these things that are confusing?
Well, what I was saying is, like, that thing, that ending was what we were talking about before, is that I almost feel like he became part of the hotel. Being part of the the whole like pictures and like all those and the grand old times of when the hotel was young and vibrant and everybody went to it, anybody's anybody's, whatever the case is, or these are the people who were the caretakers or who committed all these crimes potentially to in chaos or whatever. And I feel like when you see that picture at the end, I feel like he became part of the hotel, or like the hotel accepted him as part of it in a weird way. That's like what would be like the picture in the end. That's how I have always interpreted it.
Yeah, I mean, I thought of that too, and I guess gone to my head if I had to give you an answer.
Yeah, but I said it.
No. Jesus. Settle down. But gone to my head, I might give that answer too. I'm not sure, though. I'm really not sure.
Yeah, of course, I'm not sure either. But that's
yeah, but some like things you can be content with being sure, even if you're not sure. Like, I can't be even that far in. Like, I don't know, like, I think of that elevator scene. Like, the movie builds up to that. Obviously, the movie shows you in the beginning when Danny is talking to Tony in the bathroom. This is before he passes out, right, or screams or whatever. Tony shows him a visual of what's going to happen, right, or a visual of the hotel or the evil of the hotel or something, right, something like that. And it shows you the elevator and all the blood, which is a cool, iconic, awesome scene. Awesome. I love that. I never would have thought of that, you know, in a horror movie. That's a really cool thing that The Shining, the movie, did, right? You know it's going to come. Like, you feel like it should, right? And at some point, and it tastes its sweet time, but it does eventually come. And you realize the real labyrinthine aspect of the movie when Wendy is running through its corridors, when it's running through the hotel. This is after the whole bathroom scene and the Here's Johnny scene. She's running with the knife, scared about everything, right? She's seeing all these crazy things happening over and over again. Every time she runs, you know exactly where she is and yet have no idea where she is in the hotel. Because I think it goes hand in hand with all of the previous scenes, from like people just walking, getting their breakfast, to like Wendy, I don't know, picking up Danny from some room or whatever, or Danny going with the trike somewhere, or Jack is writing, you know, typewriting. And all this stuff, you feel like you know this hotel, but when she's running through it, trying to, like, I don't know what she's trying to escape or understand. I don't know what, but it just, you're match cutting all these visuals from previous scenes, but you have no idea where she is, no matter how many times they show you what floor she's on and what was north side or west side of the corridor she's on. You have no idea where she actually is. And so by the time the elevator scene happens, you think you might have missed it already, because there's five other times her running past other elevator corridors look exactly the same as that one. And you know it's not the exact one yet, but you feel like that's it right there. It's really weird. It's a weird effect. And I think the movie's badass that it does it. I just don't know exactly what it means. I don't know. I think this movie is like, it's more like a tone, atmospheric fuckfest of insanity. Like, it's not supposed to really do a whole lot as far as like narrative stuff. It has narrative, but not much, and it doesn't really care. Like, we think of Scatman Crothers, we see his apartment in Florida a lot more than we probably should have.
Yeah,
right. But it's both funny and kind of like cool that he keeps doing that and throughout the movie. Unless you hate this movie, in which case you might find it very annoying. People out there looking for narrative conclusions are annoyed by this movie, I'm sure. But I just wasn't, so. I mean, it was also I would say that this is the first movie that really scared me as a child, because I saw it as too young. I didn't understand anything.
Yeah, me too.
And I saw it too young, and it scared the shit out of me. For good reason. Good reason. But this is one of the very few that actually has scared me in a legit way. But obviously I was a child, but again, I was just so fascinated by this movie from the very beginning. There's so many little things, like Grady. Talk about Grady and how, like, it feels like he's being promoted within the hotel.
Right.
Right? Within the hotel, like, ghost. He's being promoted in some fashion now that Jack Torrance has been taken over as caretaker. Like, he's the first. He's got to promote himself eventually. Like, it seems really weird the way he talks about you know, his family and what he did in that red bathroom. The red bathroom. Why red? Like, this is a weird movie.
That was a really weird color. I was really thrown off by that. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Like, some of the rooms, I'm like, is it just a style thing or no? This is just bad. This is just bad.
Oh, like, is that how the 20s were? Is that what you mean? I'm sure that exists in a legit way, but I don't know if that's a style or if that's like just Kubrick being Kubrick. I have no idea. I don't know. I feel like we could also like forever talk about this movie, but yet I don't know what else to really say. I love it. I have no real idea why, like I said, but I love the what it's achieved, and I love how it still kind of spooks me. I love how I can't really fully understand it, and that's part of why it's horrifying. So any other things you guys want to talk about? I want to make sure no one gets missed on something. This is The Shining now, so it's a big fucking movie. Anything gets
on? It is, and I think there's, I don't know, I definitely want to revisit this movie, though.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, I watch it once a year. Yeah. What about you, Ralph?
Yeah, no, I love this movie, dude.
No, I mean, anything else you want to talk about or make sure you don't get missed on?
No, I'm trying to think.
Actually, I did think of something. What do you guys think of the put-upon wife of Shelley Duvall?
Oh, Shelley, yeah.
Well, his wife? What about her?
What do you think of her?
In terms of...
anything. Like, I feel like she's put there to be... Do you hate her or find her annoying? And if so, is it because you're matching what Jack Torrance is feeling? Or is it because, like, she's being put on like a lot of movies do, where, like, the put-upon wife, you know, the housekeeper wife, who is kind of annoying and there to nag at the husband? Do you think it's, like, that kind of thing working? Do you think she does a good job? Do you think it's something else?
Hmm. I mean, I would say she's probably annoying, but, I mean, she's seen him, and obviously when he was an alcoholic, so I think she's more worried that he's going to go back to his old ways and that he's going to hurt the child again.
Well, yeah. Yeah, definitely. She's definitely worried about that.
Yeah, but she does also, like, is that nagging wife. Like, the movie does a good job of, like, making her feel like she's this nagging person to Jack. So I think it's like, yeah, you want to see it from her perspective as well. And sometimes you get it from hers, but for the most part, the movie always is going to fall in line with Jack's perspective of how he feels she's talking to her, to him all the time, or how she's talking. And sometimes it does feel like nagging. And even though sometimes, because, you know, sometimes when she's talking, we'll get that, like that out of focused listening sometimes. And so, yeah, like, I just feel like it's meant more for us to not like her, feel like she's kind of like just bothering Jack. Like, why are you egging him on almost? But it's not really true. It's more like she's just worried and she's just, you know, putting her opinion and stuff.
Yeah. No, yeah, I overall agree. I think she's there to be like a strange... Like, I think because of the fact that we see Jack as, you know, he's a main character, so, like, I would say maybe a close second would be Danny, but she's not, is my point. And because we see a lot of his point of view, is that maybe we naturally fall into her as being annoying, or at least some sort of, like, naggy kind of wifey archetype. But I do feel like she does overcome it, not just because she survives, but, you know, she does manage, even though she doesn't seem like she can, especially the way she holds a bat, that she can get away with anything. But she does. She actually manages to get her son out and into safety. You know, overall, she is, you know, manages to do that, escape the evil and all that, even though she has no idea what's going on. But yeah, Shelley Duvall, though, very good acting regarding, like, being scared and shit. She does a really good job. She makes you want to, like, relate to the scared nature that she's doing, like she's feeling in that bathroom or, like, in that scene with the bat and other things. Interesting. I like that. Now I got nothing, I think. Nothing else on The Shining. Is everyone good?
I think so. I mean, I think if we wanted to have, like, a full in-depth, we could have, like, a 3-hour episode on just this movie.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think we can.
I don't think I'd let you. I think I'd drive over to your place and stab you.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's going to happen. It's most likely we're not going to do this movie as in-depth as we're doing it now. Ever again. Probably. I mean, pretty sure we don't tend to re-review movies, you know? There's no retrospective.
Hey, how do you think he got out of the food pantry or freezer?
Okay. You want to talk about Supernatural? Okay. Yeah, that's like the one evidence. That's the one evidence, right?
Yes.
That supports something supernatural.
Because it seems like the supernatural could also have a physical effect on you because they scratched up the kid and choked him and gave him bruises, right?
Right. But that could be just the one in room 237, too, right? It seems like that's a... Like, they're all kind of singular to wherever they died in, you know? But you're right. You're right. It does seem like... Right, if Jack didn't do it, and if Danny didn't choke himself, clearly it was that woman, right? That decaying woman in the bathtub that did it. And it seems like room 237 is where, like, the real bad evil is in, kind of. At least for Danny. You know, and it becomes kind of like an oasis for Jack a little bit because he sees some sort of sexual thing in it. And as far as we know, even though he did get a bad reaction out of it because he saw the old lady after he kissed her, like, you know, he doesn't tell Wendy what he saw. Why doesn't he? This is before the hotel has really taken over him, unless we all say, you know, the minute he walked in, he's been taken over. I don't know. But regardless, the pantry thing, though, it does feel like that's some hard evidence as to how, like, this whole haunting is not only real, but, like, it can actually manifest physically and let people out of pantries.
But there was I saw a clip, like, when they were, like, walking around, like, a little tour, there was, like, another entrance to the pantry that might have been blocked off by, like, shelves and shit. But then when you walk by it, there's another shower, like, Dwight's running away. That door was open, so you're like, oh, okay, so he must have gotten out through the door she locked. So it's thing weird.
Oh. I don't know about that. But as far as I don't think that's how it worked in the movie, or that's the way they were trying to get you to think about it. But maybe you're right. I don't know. Can't say it for that one. But, yeah, I mean, in the book, though, it's definitely like this. It's like a location evil. It's not just a ghost. It's like a vortex where it sucks you in if you let it, especially if people who can sense them. You know, so like mediums, you can think of mediums or people with The Shining, right, or whatever. Like it's really like a magnet, not a magnet necessarily, but it's like this vortex for them, and it loves to take those people in, to have them commit suicide, so the hotel can claim them. That's in the book. And it seems like that overall is basically how it works in the movie, too. Again, the movie doesn't really care about it, but it does seem to show some of it. So, but I don't know. Look, I have nothing else on that pantry thing other than that, like, it was a really... it's a freaky scene when you first notice it, because, like, holy shit, they're unlocking the door. Like, they can do that.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
It's one of those kind of moments. And that was really cool. Really, really nice way to... very nice, easy way to show you what the power is of this place. Yeah, totally dug it. All right, I think that's it for The Shining from 1980. We clearly all enjoy it, so check it out. Obviously, if you haven't, and that is it going to be for our show. You have been listening to Another Movie Podcast. Remember, you can follow me, Oscar, personally on Twitter and on Letterboxd for all my movie-watching habits at Armin Filmmaker, which is Filmmaker with A-R-M-E-N. Luke?
I am at Slothmaster Luke on the Twitters.
Twitters, yes. And Raf?
You can follow me on Twitter at Don Rafael, underscore between the Rafael and the L.
Remember, we are a bi-weekly show. So, and next fortnight, we'll return with the following movies that Raf has picked. Do you have those, Raf?
Do you know I don't?
No, I did not know that. I forgot to ask you.
It'll be a surprise.
Forgot to ask you before the show recording to...
Yeah, I didn't know whose turn it was.
Well, I mean, I went last and this is Luke's, so...
Yeah.
It's not that hard to figure out is my point. Stay tuned. Man. But either way, the next Jack Nicholson marathon pick, though, it's going to be Batman from 1984? 85? I don't remember. But that's going to be the next one. And funny enough, ironic enough, maybe, that it's also Roth's picks, too. And that's it. I know he was a champion of choosing Batman when we discussed it earlier in the months.
I don't know. I might have been. I can't remember.
I think so. Maybe I'm wrong. But either way, it feels like you would pick it, is my point.
I would have picked Batman 100%.
Yes. Oh, there you go. Just prove me right. So as far as what movies we're going to review, I mean,
1989.
Stay tuned. 1989? Oh, wow.
Yep.
I thought it was way in the middle more. All right, well, stay tuned until then. I'm Oscar.
And Luke.
And no one else. And Rob.
He's already left the podcast.
Yeah, he's already left. All right, later.
Look, everything in this world is running exactly on schedule. Besides, to leave, we probably have to wait until the movie's over or something.
Well, when is that going to happen?